Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Attorneys for Border Patrol shooting victim Marimar Martinez say newly released evidence shows agents saying it's time to get aggressive and heaping praise on the shooter.
We live in a strange time right now where we cannot trust our federal government.
After winning the release of a trove of photos, videos, and text messages, Martinez now plans to sue the federal government.
There are some issues here. We fix those issues. We've had great success with this operation, and we're leaving Minnesota safer.
Federal officials say despite two deaths, the immigration enforcement surge in Minnesota was a success.
It's unfortunate that this administration has shown so much animus towards working people.
Local leaders vow to fight for disaster relief money the Trump administration denied, despite residents still struggling after major storms last summer. Meantime, Chicago school board members accuse the mayor of sabotaging the search for a new CPS CEO. Illinois' latest lawsuit against the feds, fighting massive cuts to public health funding aimed at replacing lead pipes and stopping new HIV infections. And it's a battle of the state legislatures as Illinois and Indiana lawmakers ramp up efforts to land a new Bears stadium. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Justin Kaufman of Axios Chicago, Rima Amin of Chalk Beach Chicago, Sophie Sherry of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Alden Lowry with WBEZ. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. Justin, we just saw that we're finally getting some of that evidence out that Marimar Martinez and her attorneys fought to get released after the federal case against her was dropped. Mm-hmm. What stood out to you?
Yeah, it's amazing to me. What a story to think about. What was it, in October when this happened in Brighton Park? And this is when we were trying to figure out what the story was, and you heard from DHS, and they said that she used a vehicle to ram, and she used it as a weapon. And a lot of it was like, okay, we want to check this out. Now, after the deaths of Renee Good and Alex Preddy in Minnesota, you look back on that story, and you're saying that was that, you know, obviously Ms. Martinez survived, which was shot five times, but that story is very similar to look at everything that all of that evidence that came out. It shows a pattern, and it also, as you said in the clip, leading here makes you wonder about how much you can trust the government and what they say, because the DHS, they came out very strong on Marimar Martinez's case in October. They said this is what she did. She was a hostile insurgent, whatever it was, the words that you used.
A domestic terrorist.
And now you're seeing with this evidence, very similar to what we saw in video. That's the big difference, that there wasn't video in Brighton Park like there was in Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, Alden, we saw one agent saying, you know, it's time to get aggressive. Colleagues of the agent who shot Martinez, you know, sort of hyping him up. Were you surprised by the sort of aggressive tone, or not necessarily, because it kind of matches a lot of the public posture?
It has. I mean, not only, as Justin spoke to, not only has the narrative been around these agents and their safety being at risk and needing to be aggressive, but they've been very congratulatory. There were text messages where he was kind of, the officer was shot. Martinez was getting pats on the back and acquiescence in terms of being in that aggressive form. So,
yeah, you know, Rima, Martinez's attorney says, you know, she was the wrong person to mess with. She's now planning to bring a suit of her own. Do you expect to see perhaps a wave of lawsuits like this, given the number of people that have been injured and, of course, some killed during the immigration crackdown?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, you've seen Illinois lawmakers, state lawmakers across the country, federal lawmakers push back on this. And you've also seen the Trump administration kind of come to the table and you know, say, okay, maybe we should have done something different here. So I think, you know, reactions like that can certainly open up the window, or the door rather, to, you know, legal challenges.
Yeah, and when there's such clear video evidence to the contrary of
exactly
what they're saying, as you mentioned. You know, Sophie, the federal case against Martinez, of course, fell apart. There was also a Cook County case related to a protest at Broadview. Tell us what happened there.
There are a lot of Cook County cases still ongoing, but this particular protest that happened in mid-November, this was a group that showed up for a clergy-led protest outside Broadview. As they got closer to the actual facility in hopes that people would hear them praying, they were met with a line of local law enforcement. Some scuffles broke out, and ultimately 21 people were arrested. The Cook County sheriffs who did that arresting said this group had left their designated protest zone, was unlawfully occupying the roadway there, But as you mentioned, now Cook County state's attorneys have dropped charges against almost all of those people.
And it's interesting to see that, you know, some of these protesters have been charged at a time when the Cook County state's attorney is seems to be hesitant to try and go after some of the federal officials here.
Yes, this is happening in a moment when Eileen O'Neill Burke is certainly under a lot of pressure to sort of do anything about what happened this fall. They've been very clear in their stance that they, you know, are an agency that makes charging decisions. They don't investigate crimes. This is, you know, what we saw this week in terms of dropping their charges is within their powers. So we'll see if we see any more of that.
And that's a tough story, too, because you're talking about in other cities, you're seeing politicians or lawmakers in sync when they come up there. Not here in Chicago. Yeah. You saw that the mayor come out and say, We're gonna go after these ICE agents if they do anything wrong. And then it almost felt like the day later, the Cook County State's Attorney saying, well, you didn't talk to me.
Right.
I'm not gonna go after them. That is so different than what you see in Minnesota or Philadelphia or other cities that have essentially brought together Democrats to say, we're not gonna have this happen.
And to that point, a lot of people are pointing to sort of Minneapolis or Minnesota as an example of what a state's attorney could be doing. But there we have the state's attorney, local politicians, the attorney general for the state, and local law enforcement all working in tandem to sort of make that happen, which has not been the case here.
Yeah, and of course, you know, O'Neill Burke and Johnson, both Democrats, but very different flavors of Democrats, too, which could be contributing to a lot of this. You know, Rima, you mentioned the Trump administration, you know, potentially trying to turn down the temperature in Minnesota. Of course, we saw Borders Are Tom Homan brought in kind of along those lines to replace Greg Bovino. But Bovino is back on social media. He's been taunting Governor Pritzker. You know, is that perhaps an indication that President Trump is eager to see Bovino and some of his more aggressive tactics back in the streets?
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that that's, you know, I mean, I think Trump has been pretty complimentary of Bovino up until, you know, he was placed on leave or, you know, removed from Minnesota. And so I wouldn't put anything past this administration to kind of maybe change their tune and put him back in the mix or at least see those tactics that we saw with Border Patrol under Bovino.
Yeah.
Bovino's become a personality, right?
Right. Social media star.
Yeah. After they did the Blitz campaign ended here, I believe he came back for a real short spell. They've been big on promoting the activity. So I could see them making another kind of central casting move and dropping Bovino here and there.
Everybody talked about when the drawdown happened in Chicago that they'd be back.
Right.
And they'd be back.
Right.
And we heard the numbers, thousands, 2,000 ICE agents, immigration, Border Patrol agents coming back here in March. It's February.
Right.
They're drawing down in Minnesota. It is not unheard. It makes logical sense to me that the next move, I would not be surprised if in March we start seeing more and more people coming here, more and more agents coming here, and all of what happened last fall ratcheting up this spring.
Right. And even though obviously Tom Homan is maybe not quite as much of a different type of character, there's still the same messaging going on.
Right.
This was the same thing they said when they left Chicago, that crime is down, we did a lot of good, you know, unclear about where we're headed next. In this case, they have mentioned that some of these agents might be going home, but still open to wherever they're needed next was the language.
Yeah, more of a traditional federal official, perhaps, but certainly, you know, singing to the same tune as the Trump administration. Well, you know, we're talking about all these issues related to the Department of Homeland Security. Justin, Congress has been sent home without a funding deal. Of course, that's not going to do anything to immigration enforcement, but this is folks like the TSA.
Yeah.
You know, how much of a wear are these shutdowns on federal workers?
What a political calculus by Republicans in this. We're starting the midterm primaries, right? Coming up here in a month's time. Let's say that there is airport delays like there were back in October, November because of a partial shutdown. And what the reason is Democrats will want accountability from ICE agents. They want, and they're not asking for the moon. What they're asking for is no masks. They're asking for names on uniforms. They're asking for more due process, things that we know when it comes to law enforcement or what is law enforcement in Illinois, in Chicago. So those things are going to play out. And you've seen common sense, and Republicans like to use the word common sense, but you've seen a lot of Americans say, common sense says there's a lot of chaos in the street around the way this is going with ICE agents, and we'd like to see them be a little bit more accountable or maybe more law enforcement-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to fight and shut down the government over name tags or not taking masks off, That's a political risk for the Republican Party going into a very unpopular midterm cycle.
Yeah, especially the kind of thing that, you know, were this a Democratic administration, you know, having agents operate in that manner, you have to imagine a lot of Republicans would say this is exactly the overreach that we warned about.
Yeah, this is I think there's some gamesmanship happening on both sides. I think the Democrats see there's potentially some leverage here. Mm-hmm. This is a department that the president and Republicans see a lot of value in. I thought there was potential for compromise, particularly around the issue of body cams and more training. We've heard Republican voices say they were open to that. So I thought maybe there could have at least been a deal on that. Maybe they extended a little bit, give them some more time. But both sides seem to be kind of wanting to hold the line for everything that they want.
And this is not, you're not talking about left-left, radical-left, Bernie Sanders left-left, let's defund, abolish ICE.
Right.
The Democrats are willing to give the money to ICE for the operations to continue.
Right.
We're talking about very specific law enforcement sort of accountability measures that they're looking for. And Republicans are digging their heels in the sand saying, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me, I forget what report it was, but it mentioned that the White House wasn't willing to concede on, you know, ceasing the practice of racial profiling.
Right. That's something that they've had the Supreme Court back them up on. So they don't necessarily have a reason to. Well, Alden, your colleague Esther Yoon-Ji Kang had a piece this week about some Chicagoans hit by Midway Blitz who we haven't heard as much from, and this is Chicago's Asian communities. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so what they found was through some data that has been put out by a group that has really become like the go-to source in terms of data, because there's nothing that's really coming out of the administration, showed that nationally about 8,000 Asians were picked up in immigration enforcement since the beginning of Trump's second term, and I believe over 100 or so here in Chicago during the Blitz in particular. She highlighted one particular family, a Pakistani family, father was actually deported, and how that community had been very quiet about this, the sense that there was shame, the sense that that could start a rumor mill. People were very insular and so on and so forth. But I think, as the story points out in Esther's reporting, this is a community that thought it was safe, the way I think a number of immigrant communities may have thought outside of Latin America, Mexico in particular, and what they're finding is that is not true at all. And so it has helped raise voices and started some conversations among different types of immigrant communities saying, okay, we really need to kind of band together and fight this in the best way that we can.
Mm-hmm. I found it really notable in the story. They mentioned this phrase in Urdu, and it's a Hindi phrase too. It's log kya kahenge, and that means what will people say. It's
right.
Something in my culture, like it's very common, and that really, I totally saw that family. Like I can totally see this family sitting down and having a conversation that we cannot even let the people closest to us know about this because it's embarrassing. And there was something really poignant about that.
One thing I think that's lost when people think about immigration is largely thought of as like a Latin American kind of issue. The countries China and India really rival Mexico now in terms of immigration numbers coming to the U.S. The last 10, 15 years or so. So this is by far a kind of a global thing when we think about the broader immigrant community that's affected by what's happening right now.
Yeah, very interesting reporting. All right, well, turning to some city news, Justin, after many weeks of wondering what Mayor Johnson was going to do about the hemp ban that passed city council, we finally have an answer.
It has been vetoed. A nice Friday afternoon news dump, as we do
it's traditionally a tradition.
Chicago. But the mayor chose to veto an ordinance that city council passed with 32 votes. Marty Quinn in the 13th Ward said, you know what, we're going to do a hemp ban. Now, essentially, this is hemp-derived THC, intoxicating hemp products. You're talking about these kind of pop-up dispensaries. They're not called dispensaries. They're called whatever euphemism we're coming up with. But they're, you know, CBD, like what you're seeing on the screen now. But those places kind of popped up, and they're a little bit unregulated around that, you know, because you may be familiar with, like, legal cannabis shops
right.
and all the legal marijuana. This is different. And so finally, after years of trying to find a way to do this, Marty Quinn said, let's ban it. He's saying it's not safe for kids, right? So they passed it. They got it through. And the mayor said, no, I don't like it. I don't like what it does to small business. I don't like what it does to the climate here. I don't think that it's fair necessarily. And applauded by small businesses across Chicago because it really does set up and change the way that they see. You know, imagine if you had this business that was kind of encouraged by the federal government in 2018 with the loopholes mm-hmm. in the federal farm bill, figure out how you can innovate around hemp, do what you can do. They figured it out, and then they have municipalities come in and say, no, you can't. That's a problem for business climate. So Marty Quinn says, he said it to me today, that he is not going to override this veto. He does not have enough votes. He got 32. He said this was the hardest roll call in his as alderman.
Interesting.
To try and get 32. To get 34 to override, he can't do it.
Interesting.
So hemp is not banned in Chicago.
Although there is the looming specter of a federal ban, but who knows if that actually goes into effect.
Different show, different time.
Don't get out ahead of your skis, Blumberg. All right, fair enough. Okay, Sophie, some other city council action this week. Key committee passed a measure allowing residents to submit photos of people violating parking laws in the hopes of the city issuing a citation. You know, I wonder, it probably feels good to narc on somebody who parked like a jerk, but, you know, do you wonder whether this might face legal challenges? Because folks are going to say, well, this wasn't a city worker out in the field making the call.
Yeah, certainly. As someone who's fought many a parking ticket, that would be my first thought. I mean, I understand, like, I frequent often, I think that strip of Milwaukee that's actually right in front of sponsor LaSpada's office there. And yeah, it's certainly, as a driver, as a walker, as an occasional biker, there's some hazards and we're all trying to find a solution. But yeah, interesting. It looks like there's going to be some sort of like tester group of individuals who are going to respond to these things, and then maybe a specific dispatch system where people are going to immediately arrive at the blocked bike lane and get it themselves. We'll see.
As a frequent cyclist, I'm interested, but it might be a little shaky on this one.
I'll take the unpopular side on this one. It's hard. I don't like the idea that my fellow city neighbor is going to get their cell phone out if I have to double park on Ashland.
Yeah.
It's a little surveillance state-y.
It's not good. Double parking is not good. Blocking stuff, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know if I'm going to how people are going to react to their neighbors grabbing cell phones and being like, I'm going to put this on 411 or 311.
I didn't think the folks who are paid to do that kind of work needed any help. I mean, they're taking enough people by themselves. The one thing I think this story does also highlight is the cycle mafia, I'll call them. You know, this very...
They roll deep.
They
roll deep.
You see what I'm saying?
They're already tweeting right now.
I mean, very informed, very vocal community. They've been fighting for protected bike lanes and a number of other reforms for a number of years. So this, I think, is just the latest manifestation of that.
It's going to be very interesting to see where this all goes. All right, Rima, some education news. Several school board members out saying a pretty damning charge against the mayor, essentially saying he's messing with the search for a new CEO. What did we hear from them?
Yeah, this was yesterday. Six of the board's elected members issued a statement or a letter, whatever you want to call it, announcing essentially that the board had parted ways with the search firm that they hired, Alma Advisory Group, to help with their CEO search. The district has been without a permanent CEO since last summer. And now they're calling, these six members who represent a minority of the 21-member board are now calling for the district to keep interim CEO Macklin King in place until the new school board is elected and seated next January. These claims, you know, they've claimed the mayor's office, mayor's allies, including appointed school board members, have sabotaged the process, that they've leaked names of finalist candidates to publications. My own is included in that allegation. And, you know, have done a number of things to kind of get in the way of the process. And the mayor's office has denied these claims. So have some appointed school board members. I think the real question ahead is who's going to finish overseeing this process?
Right.
Alma staying on for another month and then that's kind of it.
I think
the biggest question is, when are we going to have a new CEO?
Right. Do we have any sense of where this goes from here, when we might get a search process back up and running?
Yeah. So Board President Hardin has said, in a statement from the board yesterday, said that the application window is closed on February 6th. And they're not accepting any more applications. From every indication, it seems like maybe they're narrowing folks down, but all the board has said officially is that they will have a new CEO before next school year. Next school year starts in August.
Okay.
So
I look right at you, Alden, but it's old timer.
I was just about to say the thing.
I was going to say
they're just waiting for you to apply.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea. But I can't think of a time in which there was an interim at the CPS leading CPS as long as this. And I'm trying to go back. I mean, go back to Paul Vallis and Gary Chico days. You know, even before that. But it seems like this is a different type of government. Where this is not just at the CPS. Yeah. It's CTA. There's CHA. There's a lot of time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like just sort of interims, and we're still searching for leaders of these different departments. And that's a different approach than mayors in the past.
Well, very contentious time too, because we just the last CEO we had, and just all of the drama around that. So I'm not totally surprised that it's taken a while to kind of pull this together.
You got to remember that this is a 21-member half-elected board is new for Chicago.
Right.
And, you know, the mayors in the past have had total control over this process. That is not the case anymore. And right. so, you know, that in that way, maybe it's not so surprising.
Yeah, you have to imagine Mayor Johnson is missing that iron grip that Chicago mayors once had over the school board.
Right.
All right, well, one more interesting education piece I wanted to touch on. There's a slew of ballot measures urging the governor to join this federal tax credit program for private school scholarships. Who's backing this push?
So the backer behind this ballot advisory question, which is going to show up in probably about a third of Illinois counties, is Illinois Policy. It's a libertarian-leaning organization that frequently, you know, criticizes left-leaning policies, Chicago Public Schools, Chicago Teachers Union, and this group wants to send a signal to Governor Pritzker that here, you know, we're going to ask this advisory question to a bunch of voters, and I think their hope is that voters will say they want this tax credit scholarship program, which is supposed to, in effect, send private dollars to scholarships for public, private, and homeschooled kids, and it's supposed to give tax credit incentives to those donors. Pritzker is under pressure from both sides here on to opt in, to stay out, and so that's kind of the idea behind the push. But viewers and voters should know it's a non-binding question.
Advisory referendum.
Yes.
Yes. Always important to say. All right. Well, Sophie, the family of Dexter Reed, they're calling on Chicago's police watchdog to release a report into the actions of the cops in that fatal shooting. What do we know about what might be in that report?
Right. It's not totally clear at the moment, but that investigation into the potential wrongdoing of those officers has been completed by the oversight agency, the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. And what we can glean from city records is that of the 15 allegations that the agency lodged against the five officers involved in this, as people remember, fatal shooting of 26-year-old Dexter Reed following a traffic stop on the west side, of the 15 allegations lodged against them, only one was sustained. We don't know what that allegation, and maybe excessive force or, you know, something regarding the stop, and we don't know what officer it is they're seeking to discipline, but there is that one sustained allegation. The family really wants this report out now. It's over with the Chicago Police Department at this point for review, but they want to see the final results, and they want the public to see the final results.
Yeah, a lot of interest in that case.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way the stop began, and then the fact that there were four attack team officers, I mean, like, this is hardcore CPD. These are the folks that are asked to really kind of take care of the worst crime problems of our city, and for them to be performing a traffic stop raises a lot of questions about whether that's the best use of those resources.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and this was a group, they unleashed almost 100 bullets in a matter of minutes. I mean, Dexter Reed was shot 13 times. Officers were continuing to fire weapons even after he had fallen to the ground.
Yeah. All right. Well, Alden, we've got just a little under a minute left, but some more lawsuits ahead, it would seem, over disaster relief for Chicago residents, over public health funding for the state of Illinois. Is this just going to be the next 3 years of these back and forth battles?
I think so. I mean, even in one comment with this latest battle, the president even said, you know, the liberal courts are probably going to overturn it. This is the way this administration wants to govern. They want to go after their enemies. They want to go after their political opponents. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But they're sticking with that game plan, apparently.
All right. Well, no enemies at this table, all friends, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Justin Kaufman, Rima Amin, Sophie Sherry, and Alden Lowry. And a quick note for you, the WTTW News online voter guide for next month's primary election is now up and running. Learn about the candidates, the offices, where, when, and how you can vote, and much more. You can find it at WTTW.com/news. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And that's our show for this Friday night. On a programming note, be sure to join us Monday, February 16th at 5:30 as we launch our Firsthand Democracy Initiative. Our hour-long WTTW News special will explore the state of civic participation in Chicago and Illinois and preview the new Firsthand documentary series profiling five Chicagoans who are working to strengthen democracy in very different ways. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, well, the Super Bowl is over, or should I say the Benito Bowl. Football season still going in Chicago. Stadium season. Justin, we've got a new contender for an Indiana site.
Yes, you can look to Portage, Indiana, and Halas Harbor. That's what they're calling it. Okay. A nice, really good job with the graphic designs to show exactly what it might look like on the lakefront there in Portage. But make no mistake about it, they're interested in Arlington Heights. But this next week, you're going to see movement in Indiana as they try to pass this bill out of the State House there. That will be important because that will essentially give the opportunity for Indiana to write a check.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody's waiting on. If Indiana's going to say, we'll one up you, Illinois, forget about infrastructure, how about we pay for the whole darn thing?
And their session's up middle of March. They got a snappy little session
and
there.
They're looking to get this bill done by February 17th. So pay close attention, or I think February 19th, but pay close attention because that's coming up. And that'll be why, that's why the Bears haven't made a move yet, as they kind of see what's happening with Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, and infrastructure costs.
Yeah. Halas Harbor has a nice alliterative ring to it, though. You have to give it to them.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, righting the heaviest wrongs for more than 40 years.